We probably all have an item or two of clothing that's maybe 20 years old, maybe older. Well, imagine discovering that the attic of your family home not only had a bunch of old clothes, but well-preserved garments that tell the story of 150 years of history through fashion. That's what Jane Bradbury found when she visited her aunt in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Jane's aunt Augusta was the guardian of not only that treasure trove of clothing, but letters, receipts, and more that actually put those items in their historical context. The story of those clothes and gorgeous photos of them as well are featured in the book that she co-authored. It's called American Style and Spirit, Fashion and Lives of the Roddice Family, 1850 to 1995. Jane, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you for having me, Rob.
Well, walk us through the door. The first time you saw this collection in person, you were visiting your aunt in Marshfield at age 19, I think. What did you see?
Well, first of all, I used to go there every year as a child, so I knew the house very well, and the house was like a time capsule. If you'd gone there in 1914 and you went back in 2011, it didn't change. So when I was 19, I was brought up to the attic by my aunt, and she took down this big brown box, and she took out this black velvet dress that had been bought in Paris in 1880, and she beckoned me to try it on. And I recognized the dress because I'd seen it in photographs of my great aunt Jenny. So I put it on, and as soon as I felt those whale bones against my ribs and the high lace neck, I just felt like a different person. It affected my posture. It affected the way I walked because there was a long train attached to it. And I just felt that I was a different me. I felt sort of transformed.
When did you realize how historically important this amazing 150-year collection was?
Well, from that time, I knew that there were a lot of clothes there, but I had no idea to the extent. And I went back every year, and as she got older, I started to help my sister start doing some sorting about what was in the house. So I saw a bit more. I saw 50s dresses and hats, and I was familiar with some of the 19th century dresses that she had shown me, like that black dress. But then, at about the time after she died, I decided I needed to really see what was there. And so I found a costume historian and conservator called Edward Mader, who had restored some of her dresses decades before, and I asked him to come and help me. So just after she died, we started to go through the clothes one by one. We labeled them with numbers and it gave a rough date and photographed them. And I was amazed because I knew there were lots of clothes, but I didn't realize that there were clothes from every decade of the 20th century. It was remarkable. At the same time, I discovered some old satchels filled with letters. So I would carefully pull some out, and they were from the 1890s. And the satchel also had things like menus from men's clubs from the 1890s. So at that point, I knew that there was an incredible amount in that house waiting to tell its stories.
And your Aunt Augusta was continuing a family tradition, but what made her so devoted to keeping not just the clothing, but as you say, the letters and the photos and everything else?
Well, I think it was a combination of reasons. I mean, many of us keep clothes because they're associated with people that we loved, or special events like a junior prom or a wedding or a special trip on the Queen Mary in their case. But also she had tremendous reverence for her relatives. She admired them very much. And so she didn't have the heart to throw those things away. The same for the letters. She once wrote somewhere that for her to throw away a letter would be to throw away a part of a person, and she just couldn't do that. So she was the ultimate hoarder, I guess you would say. She just kept everything. There were about 10,000 letters in the house.
I don't know. I think of a hoarder as not really having rhyme or reason, and she really had a reason, didn't she?
Yes. I think the other reason was that she and her mother were fascinated by history, and they realized that those clothes not only held memories of the family members or special events, but they held memories of America in the past. They were historical records of changing fashions, of the incredible ability of seamstresses to sew and embroider. So they were there to bring back America's past, not only their family's past.
We're talking to Jane Bradbury about her book. She's co-authored American Style and Spirit, Fashion and Lives of the Roddice Family, 1850 to 1995. Amazing story of a collection of clothing that a family preserved in Marshfield for 150 years. Jane, let's talk about the income level here. I learned again in the book, there aren't many collections that span time like this one. Usually when we have them, it's a very, very wealthy family. This is a middle-class kind of up-and-coming family over the years. Is that part of what makes this really unique?
Yes, it absolutely is. And when I found the Henry Ford Museum where I did donate the collection, they were thrilled because they wanted a collection that was from a middle-class family. They had couture clothes, as many museums do, and they also had some everyday clothes, but they didn't have clothes from this middle section, and certainly nothing that was as heavily documented as these clothes were.
And if I've seen collections like these, it was maybe from the White House or a New York City family. This is in the middle of Wisconsin, an hours-long train ride even from Milwaukee in the early days of Marshfield. Can you talk about the place here a little bit?
Absolutely. So it was quite a small town, but an up-and-coming town in the 1890s. And my great-grandmother, who was originally from New Jersey and moved to Milwaukee to teach school, fell in love with my great-grandfather. And then she inherited some money, and instead of using it to fix up their house or whatever, she encouraged him to use it to buy his own business. And he'd heard about this failing veneer company in the small town of Marshfield, which at that time was, as you say, it was 8 hours away by train. And whereas Milwaukee had some 200,000 or 20,000 inhabitants, Marshfield only had about 5,000. So they just got up from Milwaukee and went to that small town that didn't have very many amenities, and he took over the management of this failing company, and he acted as a hardworking entrepreneur, and he turned it over and eventually turned it into a world-class company that sold in Europe and across America. His son then took it over and expanded it even more.
And your aunt taught about the early days of Marshfield, and the word rough seems to come up a lot. This clothing, they had to protect from the mud. They would walk around, I understand, with boards to put across the mud puddles as they were walking around.
Oh, right. So the streets would not have been paved until about the late teens. And there's a photograph in the book of the outside of the house, and it's just a dirt path, really. And horse and carts. The land had been heavily wooded, but a lot of it had been cut down. And my great-grandmother reputedly said when she got there, "There are more stumps than people." And she was quite a sophisticated person, so this was quite a change for her. But she and other women who had moved to that rough, small town, they got together and started a women's club that would, one of them would read Shakespeare plays together, and they would dress up in outfits like Shakespearean heroines. And they had another club called the Ladies Travel Class. And the travel was completely mental. They got together and they studied different parts of the world, Spain, Portugal, Scandinavian countries, and America itself. And they were very serious, hardworking, and gave each other reports to keep their minds going.
I want to talk just a bit about the fashion itself, which I haven't brought up yet. Looking at the pictures of the clothing and, in many cases, of people wearing them in their original use, it's amazing how many things have changed, and yet some of the old clothing, I could see somebody wearing something like that now, maybe at a wedding, maybe even in casual company. What do you make of the changes in fashion that you see here?
Absolutely. Fashion does have a way of changing and then coming back on itself. And I think certainly some of the 1930s dresses that you'll see in the exhibition, mm-hmm. the Henry Ford, and the book, could be worn absolutely today. In fact, I would be delighted to have them in my wardrobe because they are very... The 30s was a time when they were really quite very modern, very minimalist in a way, but very elegant. The way they would use the bias cut to fit the body. One of them, which is probably homemade by my grandmother during the Depression, using a McCall's pattern, that's very much influenced by Hollywood, very glamorous with sort of draperies coming on the back. And also some of the 1950s dresses you could absolutely wear today. Fitted lace dresses with lovely necklines. You could wear them today and get some very good remarks, I think.
And I'm looking at a pair of 1950 men's shoes that I would happily wear too. Jane, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun. It's an amazing collection.
Thank you for having me.
That was Jane Bradbury. She's the co-author of American Style and Spirit, Fashion and Lives of the Roddice Family, 1850 to 1995, which tells the story of her family's amazing collection of clothing. It's currently on display at the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan, some parts that are coming to Wisconsin, too. You can see a slideshow of some of the garments and of Aunt Augusta on the Central Time Facebook page and over at WPR.org.